Right, before we get going, let's just pray. Father, it's all about you. It's really struck when we were singing, I will set my face to seek you. I will listen for your voice. Fix my eyes on you. And I pray today that we will set our faces to seek you, that we will listen for your voice, that we will hear you speaking through what's said today. It's not about my words and my ideas. It's about you and your Holy Spirit speaking to each one of us and touching us and drawing us on into a deeper relationship with you. Pray that you'll be with us now. Amen. So recently Marion circulated an article that she'd found on the internet. It was provocatively titled, "Why Do So Many Incompetent Men Become Leaders?" Now, we're not unpacking that today. The irony isn't lost on me that you've got three men speaking today, because Rolf and Alan are joining me. But they are more than competent. I will, if you're interested in it, there will be a link on the talk. If you're on Facebook, you can find it on Dave Hall's Facebook feed. But there were some points in it that I thought were quite interesting. One of the things the author said was that we as people find it difficult to discern between confidence and competence. Apparently, countless studies show that if you have a leaderless group, they will have a natural tendency to elect a self-centered, overconfident, narcissistic individual as their leader. And I think when I watch reality TV that you can see some of that. I often wonder whether it's the program makers wanting a bit of controversy in the program, but you do see that. The article went on to say that the mythical image of a leader, the people that are held up by the world as being good leaders, if you look at those people, they embody characteristics commonly found in personality disorders. So within the business world, Steve Jobs is held up as a great leader, a genius. Apple is the most valuable company in the world at the moment. But if you actually look at his personal life, he was fairly narcissistic. I know amongst my friends who want to be successful entrepreneurs, Richard Branson is their example, but he can be quite histrionic. And the article went on to say politicians, I don't know what you think about our politicians at the moment, but if you look at our current politicians, those in years gone by, they all have a fairly Machiavellian streak within them. And the article went on to say that successful leaders are usually humble. I made the interesting comment that the characteristics that get you to a position of leadership are not the characteristics you need when you're in that position to be successful. Last time when we were talking about Proverbs, I talked about the fact that there's lots of advice out there. Some of it is good, some of it's not so good. Some of it seems to contradict itself. And again here you've got a thing where an example where our experience, our instinct, our gut feel will misguide us. Examples lauded by the world are perhaps not the best. And I really do think that Proverbs is, and digging into Proverbs is so important. It's the wisdom learnt over the generations on how to live well in God's world. And the book of Proverbs, if we really dig into it, if we really, you know, get it in our hearts, it can be a filter that we can put so much advice and things that we're told within the world through. So today we're looking at working well in God's world. There are a number of proverbs related to work in Proverbs. I put them all into a Wordle program. I probably should have taken the word work out, because that's fairly self-evident. But you can see some of the things that are highlighted there. interestingly, hands, and I'm quite sure will is there, but I probably should take that as well. You've got poverty, you've got gathers, you've got brings, got diligent. If you look at, if you take the positive aspects of those comments, then, and I did take work out this time, then you get things like little, hands, diligent, gathers, abundant, land, brings. And if you look at the sort of the negative comments within there, you've got things like fantasies, chase, disgraceful, laziness, unfaithful, coming through. So those are some of the proverbs there are to do with work. Interestingly, last time Rosie spoke on better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. My version of that is better a bag of chips from the kebab van with love than a meal at a top restaurant with hatred. But if you were reading that and you were thinking about work and looking for a job and things, you might say better a minimum wage job with love than a big salary with hatred. Or better a job with low, you know, that hasn't got a status with it, than a high status job with hatred. Interesting, in some of the proverbs that I pulled out with work, there's one that says better a little with righteousness than much gain with injustice, which has similar connotations, could be read in the same way, although obviously it also is saying a lot about, you know, working with honesty and integrity and in a just way, rather than cutting corners and being unjust and dishonest for gain. One of the other things to say is that within Proverbs, the Proverbs about work tend to assume that you have a job and are encouraging you to work hard and diligently and honestly and in a right way within that job. But obviously, if you haven't got a job, then Alan's favourite proverb, I think this is the one you said last week, wasn't it? Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. You know, hopefully that can be helpful. The course I went on Proverbs said that often when people talk about Proverbs and preach on Proverbs, they will pick out, so they say, right, we're going to talk about work or marriage or whatever it is, and they'll pick out the individual Proverbs and they'll talk about that. And that's perfectly legitimate. I mean, indeed, even in the video that I showed last week, Proverbs, it did say that Proverbs 10 to 29 were these sayings of Solomon, and they were to be treated as sort of a reference book, a library where you could dip into them and you learn from them. But I also made an interesting point on the course, which I thought was really quite good. If we truly believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God, then there may be some reason that we cannot see now that these proverbs were grouped together in the way that they were. The person pulling them together may well have had a reason for doing that. And there are times when if you read the proverb and then you read the proverbs around it, within what they call the paragraph or the cluster, you do find that they give wisdom in the round around the issue that you're looking at. So I talked about last time Proverbs 4, 20 to 22, which was about keeping sight of the word of God, having it in my heart. And if you go on to read the verses 23 to 28, there are some good pointers on ways that you can do that I found helpful. So today I'm not going to go through a whole load of individual proverbs about work. I'm actually going to pick a passage, a couple of clusters, and make some comments about that. Alan and Rolf are going to talk about some proverbs they found and how they help them within their work situation. And we'll see where we go. But before we do that, I thought I would give out some sheets. Do you want to dish those out? I'll keep one. So on one side, we've got proverbs on work that I found listed. And then on the other side, we've got the passage that I'm going to be speaking from, which is Proverbs 25, 6 to 28. Why don't you take couple of minutes just to read through those, and then perhaps a few minutes to just talk with the people around you in twos, threes or fours or whatever. And which proverbs do you find helpful? Which surprise you? Which are new to you? Which would you like to find out more about? So just a little discussion and some thoughts, and then maybe get some feedback on that. So,
Sorry? We're looking at both sides.
You can look at both sides, or you can choose to look at one side. I don't mind. So, a couple of minutes to read what's on the sheet paper, a little bit of discussion, and then we'll see where we go with that. Okay, so we have some feedback. Careful with honey, yeah. So any of the proverbs on work that people liked or thought were good? Sounds similar to Andy Reid's favourite proverb, doesn't it? A nagging wife is like a dripping tap.
Which is Sycamore, I'm sure it's the dripping tap.
Any other? Yes, Pam?
I like the Proverbs 28:19. Those who face
fantasies
will have their fill of poverty, thinking about hours and hours in front of the screen playing games.
Yeah, I think there was a comment about that at the front here as well.
I like better a little with righteousness than much gain with injustice.
Yeah.
I like one on the other side, verses 11 and 12. We just changed CEO at work.
Yep.
And they're making decisions that affect the whole company.
Yeah.
And they're actually making decisions that people at the bottom are saying, yeah, that's the right thing to do. And being received well.
That's great. That's great to hear that. And I do like the poetry of those verses as well. The apple of gold in a setting of silver and an earring of gold, an ornament of fine gold. I think there's some real clever imagery there as well. Any other thoughts, comments?
I was worried that because you're outdoor working, you can get your fields ready after that field dry task. I had to get my garden sorted out, but mostly no, it's got to go to work before you sort out your house. Okay, fine.
Yep, where is that? Yep. Now you can read them at various levels, can't you?
Yes.
Any other comments, thoughts?
I was struck by the power of the tongue can break a bone.
Yeah.
15.
A gentle tongue at that as well. That's verse 15 of Proverbs 25. Through patience a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone. I think there's some things the world could learn from those things, isn't there? Yeah, there's a lot about not eating too much honey, isn't there?
When they learn to sugar, can't you?
No, quite possibly, yeah. Right. Rolf Allen, which of you is... Who have I got up first? I think I've got you up. Is that yours, Will?
Yes.
Yeah.
These are my couple of verses. Couldn't find ones that fitted in on Dave's sheet, so these ones, after some time, spoke to me. But It's interesting that they were in this little book that I got given, and didn't think anything about it at the time, but I got given this book from Lucy and Daniel on a Father's Day. So definitely the right ones. So the two verses are Proverbs 12:1, to learn you must love discipline, it is stupid to hate correction, and I've included Hebrews 12:11 because it's linked. No discipline is enjoyable while it is happening. It is painful, but afterward there will be a quiet harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. Now, there's also, I just feel that this fits in with the trust in the Lord your God, here with the verse 6, just saying that that God guides your paths and makes your path straight, and so that fits in with discipline. But before I talk about the work thing, I just want to go back a bit, because for me, this thing about discipline is a real struggle, and always has been. So I had to look at discipline through my life. And really, I started off my life hating discipline, because I ended up going to boarding school, and discipline was very intense. From getting 10 spellings, from doing 10 spellings and getting 3 wrong, you got 3 hidings. If you got 4 wrong, you got 4 hidings. You know, so it was really tough to. It's been a lifetime of coming around to accepting discipline, not only accepting discipline, but learning to love discipline. And life isn't fair. For some people, they're born with discipline. Discipline is just an easy part of their lives. They are just those type of people. My boss is one of those people. He's just, everything he does is perfect. You know, prides himself on not missing a day, you know, not having a day's sick leave, and all of those sort of things. And it's always, and discipline is easy for them. I think for most people, we're somewhere in the middle. For the likes of myself, I found it always difficult to instill, not only instill discipline in my own life, but for discipline to be given to me, because it has an adverse reaction. So God's taken me on a journey with discipline, really, because he's ended up putting me in the pharmaceutical industry, which is all about getting things right, all about discipline, all about being, you know, self-disciplined. And so you've got these two things. You've got being disciplined, whether it's from God or from another person, or perhaps if it's from another person, indirectly it's come from God. And you've got self-discipline, which again comes from God, but it's something that somehow God speaks to us about. It has been difficult to have correction given to me at work, and for me to turn around and say, right, I'm going to take that on board, and I'm going to I'm going to do something about it. So that in itself has been a journey over a good sort of 20 years. And use that feedback to improve myself or to improve things in my workplace. I think particularly also because I'm not passionate about my work, so it's not something that's, and again, this is where the disciplines come in from when I was younger, saying, yep, you've done an aptitude test, that looks like what you should be doing, off you go, you get trained up in that and you do that. So it has been difficult then to accept that, you know, this is, and this goes back to somebody saying something about, you know, Rosie's verses about better having a job. I often feel very, very blessed. Through the recession, I was still able to, our company was still able to give a few small increases while many companies were not. Lots of people lost their jobs and everything, and you know, God was really good, and I was able just to keep on going. So on a day-to-day basis then, it's about taking pride in my work. It's about sticking with something. The thing that I absolutely loathe are reports. And whenever you have an issue in a pharmaceutical company, whenever you have a breakdown, as a man, we're a fixer people. You know, we like to just fix something, and it's great. I love that part of it. It's very easy to, you know, it's not easy to fix something. Sometimes it takes a while, especially at 2 o'clock in the morning, or 3 o'clock in the morning when I get called out. But that's the easy bit, actually. And if I was in another industry, it would be easy to fix that problem and walk away and say, yes, I've done it, saved the company once again, you know, and off we go. But with the pharmaceuticals, it's what was the root cause? Why did it happen? Mm-hmm. And then it's a report. And the report can take the best part of 2 days to sit down and write and go through. And I'm not great with that sort of thing. I'm not great with writing stuff, but I'm just not great with reports and sitting down and focusing on it, and having the discipline to keep coming back. But that's my struggle, and that's where God helps me with discipline to do that. Then other things in my daily sort of thing is not falling into the trap of gossiping or pulling people apart. And it's very difficult because we do, unfortunately, have poor management. And it's always it's always easy to just fall into that trap and start tearing the management apart or ripping into other people. It's discipline not to do that. And then it's also important to be disciplined about, people think discipline is just about, yes, doing everything that the company asks, always doing that. But it's a sort of fine line about being disciplined about doing so much for the company, and then also being disciplined about saying, no, that's enough. They've had enough of my time. I need to put my foot down. And it is difficult because, the people that obviously push themselves forward end up, getting promotion or whatever. And hence no promotion because I I tend to say, no, that's enough. The company's had enough time from me. All my bosses, whatever, they are all there longer hours than me. Mm-hmm. You always get a bit of a frown when you're walking out the door, as if to say, you're leaving already, or why you're leaving. Mm-hmm. So it is a challenge. And I think over the past year as well, it's been this discipline thing has also been difficult. I've come to blows a few times with the management, and it's being disciplined about sort of writing the stuff down and saying, this is what I've got a problem with, emailing it out and actually taking the extra time to do that. It's all time consuming, so it is quite difficult, but again, this is where discipline helps me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not going to really go into it, but discipline, self-discipline, helps me, learn. And I'd say more than in my company business, it's been more on a personal level. And I think God given me wisdom, but I learned through discipline, and it's taken a long time to realize that how much you learn through being disciplined and self-disciplined. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to be able to pass it on to my son. It's exactly the same. And I can see, I can see how he dislikes self-discipline. So, but unfortunately, it's something that we all need to do. You can say, no, I'm not a disciplined person, or discipline is just not for me. I can't be self-disciplined. But unfortunately, it's not whether it's for you or not. It's something that we all have to do, and we all have to get used to. The people that are born with it are blessed. Okay, that's me done.
Go on. See if you. Hopefully, is that it? Yeah.
It's difficult with Proverbs, right? There's so much in there, huge amounts. And to be honest, I was talking to David earlier. You could take virtually any verse and apply it to business and apply it to virtually any part of life, because it just does, right? It's how we live our lives in front of the world. The first two verses here, this is a challenge for me, and it's something that I really is a focus these days in my life, is this whole idea of integrity. He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known, Proverbs 10:9. And then the integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. Just quickly, I'm going to throw this out, right? What do you understand by integrity? Just some basic words or phrases. What hits you when you think of someone is a person of integrity? Because it's one of those weird words, right?
Honesty, truth, justice.
Justice, reliable.
Trustworthy.
They say what they do and do what they say.
Yeah, say what they do what they say. Yeah, so there's a whole massive area, really. It's I'm just going to focus on one word that came out there, which is honesty. And I think also you have to apply consistency as well. So being consistently whatever, consistently honest, consistently faithful or whatever. Proverbs 16:11, when you read it in normal translations, that is, this is New King James, the first two, which is my normal translation, and in 16:11, in the New King James, it sticks very much to the original language, and it says, a just weight and balance are the Lord's. All the weights in the bag are his work. In the Message, they retranslated that and set that into current context. So God cares about honesty in the workplace. Your business is his business, which I thought was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just taking, you know, that whole idea of trading and weights and stuff and putting it into our modern context. So honesty. So I try to be honest. Sometimes it's a painful thing. Sometimes it's hard to be honest when there's a temptation not to be honest, right? So take an example. A few years ago, I had just started a new job, and I was expected to be learning. You know, it was a technical trainer job. I had to be learning all the new products and how they work and so on. And in the middle of this learning time, I was also supposed to move house. And I discovered that I needed to take some of the days off because I was home-based. So I needed to take some extra days off because it was taking longer and there were complications and so on. And I did. I took an extra day or two off when I should really have been working away. And at the end of that week, my boss came to me and she said, So I see you haven't got this far, you haven't done these tests, and why is that? You know, and I was tempted, right? I was tempted to say there are problems here and that's a big area and I can't do that. And I told her, I'm sorry, I actually had to move and I took some extra time off. And she was horrified, and she referred that up to her boss, and they basically put me on a longer trial period. They extended it twice as long, so I was on for a year instead of 6 months. And it all seemed sort of bad, and yet down the line, and this lady who was my boss, wasn't the most wonderful boss. She was gifted in other areas, she wasn't a great boss. But she later admitted that she was surprised at how painfully honest I was, you know, and that she had basically argued for me when her boss said, well, should we just end it here? She said, no, because I know I can trust what he says, you know, so I'll give him another chance. We'll just extend the trial period. That came out later, you know, but initially it was horrible for me. It was just sort of, oh, no, I could have covered it up. And other areas as well, so with honesty. So also, you know, how are you honest with people, right? Take context of outside work, my daughter, you know, like, or a daughter who's sort of 3 or 4 years old, and the whole white lies business, right? So daughter comes wearing basically a dustbin bag, you know, am I the most beautiful girl in the world? What do you say to that, right? it's the most beautiful address you've ever made, you know, or something like that. Yeah, you know, you can get around it, but taking it further, what about, and this is the this was quite an interesting example for me. I watched a recent series of what is it called? How I Met Your Mother. Embarrassing to admit it, but anyway, and there was this particular episode where it was called the tramp stamp, but don't take that the wrong way if you understand what a tramp stamp is. The idea was there was this lawyer who went to his workplace, and just outside his workplace, he was a successful lawyer on a big case, he met this tramp, this homeless person, who he immediately recognized. And this guy was a previous colleague, you know, at law school. And he said, oh, what are you doing there? You know, why are you on the street? Oh, it went bad for me 2 years ago. You know, I was thrown out, and now I haven't been able to get a job and all of this. And this lawyer says, I know, it's okay. I can tell my boss, you know, that you're a great guy because you got really good marks at law school, and I'm sure he'll give you a job. Mm-hmm. And he goes and he recommends this tramp to his boss, who's not on best terms with him anyway. And this tramp comes up and just basically totally embarrasses him, you know, with his behavior and everything. You know, he's leaving a mess everywhere, and he's not very nice, and he's, you know, just not being respectful to the boss. And the boss takes the lawyer aside and says, who is this? You know, who is this? You recommend this guy? He's terrible. I can't employ him because, you know, you think he's such a good guy. I can't take your word. So you're off this case now. You know, interesting, right? As a Christian, you would think, oh, he did the right thing. And yet immediately, his word was lowered right down. When he told his friends, when he met up and the lawyer told his friends, they said, oh, yeah, that's the tramp stamp. We can't trust what you say because you just recommend anything. There's no quality. There's no level of assurance there. You know, you just recommend anything because you're trying to be nice. Interesting. I had an equivalent situation, or I saw an equivalent situation years ago in Prague. I was in a startup company. I was a third or fourth person who joined. You know, we were busy as bees and working as like crazy in this startup. And the boss was he was a serial entrepreneur, they call it. In other words, this was his third startup. He's already sold two of them before. One day, you know, this man walks in. He wasn't, I don't think, quite a tramp, but he had lots of plastic bags and things like that, you know, looked quite, you know, like he wasn't doing so well. And he came up to this boss and he said, hi, Roman, you remember me? I was in the last company with you. Have you got a job? I can work for you. You know, a very similar sort of situation. And this guy, this boss, Roman, said, you know, really nicely, took him aside and said, look, I'm really sorry, I don't have a place for you. But he took him down. He wasn't pointing the finger, but he maintained his quality standard. You know, quite what they said after that, whether he offered him some money or some help or something, I don't know. But he moved, he took him out and he said, no, I'm sorry, you know, we don't have a place for you here right now. And that guy now, he's heading a multi-million, if not billion-dollar company in the US, which he'll probably sell again. And it's interesting, right? The automatically what we would think of as the sort of right Christian approach, is it actually, you know, maintaining integrity as such? Is it something that where people will respect your decision, will hold your decision high and say, you know, he made the right decision there? What we have to do, be honest in love, I believe. So you can't just say, no, go away, I'm not going to take any notice of you, you're not right. You know, you've got to deal with that person in love, but you've also got to make the right decision. So that's me.
Brilliant. Let me put that down. Right, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ralph. That was great. Okay, you may want to look at your sheets because I'm going to pick and choose some verses as we go through them. Whether I'll quite get to the honeycomb, I don't know, but we will see. So the passage kicks off with, do not exalt yourself in the king's presence. Do not claim a place among his great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before his nobles. I only recently realised that passage was in Proverbs. It shows my Bible knowledge is lacking. But obviously there's something very similar that Jesus said, didn't he? He was at a party. People were trying to sit at the top table of the party. It obviously wasn't an English party that would have had a table plan, seating plan, and labels and places. And Jesus said, well, hang on a minute. You don't want to sit at the top table and be asked to move down. It'd be far better to sit at one of the lower tables and be asked to move up, wouldn't it? I think it's quite interesting, that passage of Jesus. Maybe it's because of my natural, the way I tend to be servant-hearted. Maybe it's because of my upbringing, the fact my parents were very strong on, you know, actions doing the talking, actions speaking louder than words. But that attitude was my attitude in my working life. I looked to do the job that was in front of me. I looked to do it to the best of my ability. I looked to do it diligently. Rolf was talking about the nice bits and enjoyable bits of his job and the not so enjoyable bits. I know people who were very good at fixing problems, but you wanted them to write up the report and do the work and do the things, because when you got quality audited, you got audited on it, and you go to them and say, have you written up all of these because we need to show how we do it? Oh, I haven't quite got around to that yet. Enjoy doing the fixing, don't enjoy writing reports, I'll just leave that. I tended to try and do the enjoyable stuff and the not so enjoyable stuff, and I tended to make the priorities not my priorities but the priorities for the company or the organisation. I remember actually saying to God at the beginning of my working life, after I graduated, do you know, I will work hard, I will work honestly, I will do my best to be a witness for you in the thing, and I will allow you to let me find favour with my bosses and take care of me that way. And God did. So that's just some thoughts there. If you jump down, verse 13, like a snow-cooled drink at harvest time is a trustworthy messenger to the one who sends him. He refreshes the spirit of his master. Like clouds and wind without rain is one who boasts of gifts never given. You can just, basically it's saying a nice drink on a hot day. And it's a hot day when you've been working hard, because harvest time you've been working hard in the heat of the thing. It's like a trustworthy messenger. Are we known to be trustworthy in our workplaces? If you think about a messenger in those days, there was no instant messaging. Someone would be sent off to deliver a message. And you would have to trust them that they would go and deliver the message and they wouldn't detour through the local inn or tavern. You know, do we work as well when our bosses are watching us as hard as when they're not watching us? And then when they arrived, the person the message was for might not be there. And then they would have to make a decision. Do they follow on to try and catch up with the person? Do they leave it with the household? Do they wait there for the person to return? And so there's an element there, isn't there, of, you know, going the extra mile, It would be very easy for someone to say, well, it turned out the person wasn't there, I've left the message. Yeah, you wanted to reply, well, I'm sure it'll come when he gets back. Is that how you would want it if you were the person sending the messenger? So are we known as being trustworthy? Like a club or a sword or a sharp arrow is one who gives false testimony against a neighbour. Are we honest in our work? It was interesting hearing Alan's story, and I have to say, being honest to a direct question is something I find fairly easy within my work. But certainly when I was working in Avon, if you were in a meeting, something had gone wrong, and the boss was ranting and raving and delivering out blame, I wasn't very good at saying, oh, hang on a minute, that isn't fair to blame that person. I need to take some of the blame as well. And I tended to keep my head down and get out of the room and get on with my job. So how honest are we? Like a broken tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in time of trouble. I've got a gold tooth. I had a couple of abscess underneath the same tooth. I was saying recently to Rosie, it's the worst pain that I've ever known. I did qualify it, and so, of course, it's nothing like childbirth, so I'm told. Rosie actually said, no, well, for me, toothache is a lot worse than when I was giving birth to my children. And she did qualify it by saying she had fairly easy childbirth. So you can take that up with her. I now know where pain thresholds are. But how faithful are we? We have a saying, don't we? You know, you find out who your friends are when things get difficult, because they're the ones who stay around and are faithful. I know when I had people working for me, if I said to somebody, would you do this for me? If they were faithful, they would go away and they would do it. They would come and find me if there were issues that meant they couldn't do it or they had questions. And that you could go and speak to them a week later or 2 weeks later or whenever and find that they'd done all this excellent work and they'd taken things on and they'd moved it on. And it was a real joy having those people working for you. But there would be others, and I'd know that I'd ask them to do something. They'd say, yes, I will do that for you. And I'd have to go along in 2 days' time and remind them that they'd said yes, they would do it for me. And then probably go along again at the end of the week and say, it's about time you started doing it if you're going to meet the deadline that I need. So how faithful are we in what we do? And then in verse 26, it talks about a muddied spring or a polluted well of the righteous who give way to the wicked. And you had Alan's example of being honest that, well, actually, I needed a bit more time to move house. And Ralph's touched on a bit about how he's had to at times say, no, I've given you the work you need. I need to spend time with my family and I'm not going to spend the extra hours here. And there are times when we do need to stand up for people. We do need to say, no, you shouldn't be blaming them. It isn't their fault. These are the issues. No, that isn't right. Or no, you know, great, you're praising me for the credit for something, but actually all these people as well were part of that. Are we trustworthy? Are we honest? Are we faithful? Are we righteous? How are we doing for time? I might get to this. Richard touched on this, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a ruling rightly given. And it's great to hear that in his company, you know, the CEO is making changes that everyone in the organisation can see is good. You know, how readily do we accept rulings that are rightly given? If we manage people, do we rule people right? Do we give right rulings? And as Ralph touched on the discipline, there are times when you do need to say to people, you know, you got that wrong, you know, things need to change. You can't act like that. You were late for a meeting, you know, all these people were sat around waiting for you. So it isn't just about praising people for the good things they've done and saying that was all great. It's actually pulling people up, showing them where they need to improve, because it gives them the opportunity to improve and do that. Like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is the rebuke of a wise judge to a listening ear. I really struggle with this one. I am quite open to listen to rebuke and criticism, particularly from someone I respect. But I struggle to see it as an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold. It's something I take to heart and it eats away inside me. I will take it on board, I will look to do better next time, but it will cause me pain in there. And so I'm working hard at seeing it as learning from it and then saying, wow, that was an earring of gold, I will now move on. Through patience, a ruler can be persuaded and a gentle tongue can break a bone. John picked up on this as, again, lovely poetry. Remember one of my plant managers, the guy I worked for, he was describing, he and the other European plant managers used to meet together with the main board director who oversaw the division. And things weren't going so well. The automotive industry was in a bit of a dip and was having a knock-on effect on profitability of the division and so on and so forth. And so there'd be all these things. I want, you know, the main board director would be saying, I want you to do this and you must do that and you've got to do this and issue all these edicts. And my plant manager used to come home from those meetings and spend a couple of days thinking about it. And then he would ring up this main board director and he'd say, I've thought about what you've asked me to do and I'm not really sure that's very helpful, but I'll do this instead. I'm quite happy to do that thing, but this thing, that's just, you know, not going to make a difference. How about I do this and this? And then apparently they'd meet again a month later and they start looking at the actions that they were all supposed to have done, and some of the plant managers would have gone away with the best intentions of doing the stuff, and the day-to-day of running the plant would have caught up with them and they wouldn't have got round to doing it. And so they would get told off. And there were those who looked at it and decided that it was all a load of rubbish, so they ignored it anyway. Came back and they took their beating. And then he turned to my plant manager and his, and the plant manager said, well, yeah, I've done this and I'm working on that and this is going well. And after a while, some of the other plant managers went, hang on a minute, that's nothing like the list of actions you got at the last meeting. And so he had gone back with patience and a gentle tongue and had moved things forward. Like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Very easy, isn't it, to see that in relation to addictions, with alcohol or drugs or gambling. People who've been in that and are struggling with that are like a city with broken walls. But early in my working life, I was by a photocopier doing some photocopying just outside one of the boss's offices, and he hauled in a couple of people and he started tearing off strips off them because they hadn't done something. And these guys, very gently, with a gentle tongue, started pointing out that there was this issue and that issue and something else that meant they couldn't do. And by the end of the meeting, the boss had to apologise for having lost his temper. The legitimate concerns that he had, or the things that these guys weren't doing that he wanted to address for the good of the company, weren't addressed. They got completely lost in, he lost his temper, they pointed out some things, he had to apologise. And so how is our self-control at work? You know, how do we act? I mean, self-control is one of the fruit of the spirit. What time are we at? I really ought to finish, shouldn't I? Let's just do this and then I'll finish. So, like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on a wound, is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. I think it was the Sunday at the end of this half term. Sunday's a bit of a chore day for us, and Isabella was thinking about the things she needed to do as I was having breakfast with her and Toby. And she had some homework to finish off. And Toby piped up and said, I didn't get any homework at half term. And you can imagine that Isabella didn't find that particularly helpful. And I said to Toby, I said, that wasn't really a very helpful comment, was it? I was just saying. How are we when we see people at work who are struggling in their work or in their personal life? when things aren't going so well for them. Are we all, well, I've done my bit, I'm doing okay? Or do we look to help them? If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. There will be those at work who we will find difficult to interact with. Remember one pastor in America saying, often you find it's the other Christians at work who are the ones that wind you up the most. And at the time, that really spoke to me, because I was. But there are going to be those you just won't get on with, because we're all different. Some people we get on with, some we don't. There'll be those that you feel, when you give an inch, they take a mile. There'll be those who will shift the blame onto you. There'll be those that will take credit when you think it's due to you or to other people. How do we react when we see them struggling, when things aren't going so well for them? Are we as ready to jump in and help them as we are the people we get on well with at work? Yeah, we've got to uphold the integrity and all the things that we said, but also coming alongside and helping people when they're in trouble can be a great way of speaking to them and breaking down bridges and opening things up. Like the north wind that brings unexpected rain is a sly tongue which provokes a horrified look. Do we speak slyly at work? Or are we open and honest? If you've got a problem with someone, it's far better to just talk to them and explain that than to make sly comments. And then better to live on the corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. How does that apply to work? It may be a bit of a leap, but I think that actually doing things at work to build team, to engender a good working atmosphere, looking to build bridges and relationships with people, not necessarily allowing people to take advantage of us, but being there to help people and come alongside people when they're struggling. And in my time at Avon, actually having people coming to me and saying, David, have you got time when you could sit down and just help me with this? I don't know what to do with this. Was actually some of the times I felt most honoured. And I was more than willing to find time to help them with that. I find it far nicer to go into a workplace where I enjoy being and I get on with the people than to go to a place where there's a lot of tension and quarrelling and bickering, which there can be within workplaces. And I have had bosses who have tried to engender that amongst the people that work for him. So there are some thoughts. I've run out of time, so I'm not going to get to what honeycomb has got to do with work. If you've got ideas, that would be great. Rolf, Al and myself would love to pray for anyone, particularly related to work, but we'll pray for anyone with regards to this or anything else. If anyone feels that they've got real faith for helping with me and my struggling with rebukes from a wise judge, then you're more than welcome to come and pray for me. I would love that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.